Welcome to Falling Awake, Creating the Life of Your Dreams. This program, Celebrate, is an excerpt from a 14-part audio workshop that took place at the Baker Park Retreat Center in the Black Hills of South Dakota. This program focuses on the 12th success strategy from the book Falling Awake. The entire workshop is available in an audio format and can be ordered at the website www.fallingawake.com. My name is Carolyn. I am narrating this program and interviewing Dave so that he can expand on what he is saying in the workshop. Dave, before we start the program, perhaps you could tell the people listening how they can most effectively participate in this workshop.
Often when people listen to a program, they do it very passively. And what I'm recommending is a much more active approach for you to listen as if you were actually in the workshop. The second thing is to participate like you were there by doing the exercises. I'm asking people here to actually engage in each of these exercises by writing and speaking. That's what I'm asking you to do so that you get the most value out of this one part of the entire workshop.
Now we're joining Dave Ellis and the participants in the Falling Awake workshop.
Part of the reason to celebrate is to keep alive what we learn and what we develop, the successes that we've had. And for me, the most effective tool to keep something alive is to celebrate the success and to absorb it. Because some of you, once in a while, when there's a good reason, will celebrate. But what I recommend is that there is always a good reason. It's called you made it. You got born. And particularly you, the life you got born into. It's worth celebrating. I'm thinking it's worth celebrating almost constantly, perpetually, ritualistically, so that you get up in the morning and you lay there and you begin the celebration. It's like, whoa, I'm alive again! Yay! Now, of course, for some of you, you'd have to mock that up a little. You know, you'd have to create it in your language first. But what if you were your word? And what if you woke up in the morning and said, yay! And that word, that conversation, led to a particular attitude, which led to a particular series of behaviors, like shaking with joy and big smiles. And what if those behaviors led to certain circumstances, like people around you with big balloons and horns and noisemakers and laughter and joy? Anyway, that's a possibility, which is ritualistically daily celebrating. And then you say, well, yeah, but I wake up some days and I don't feel good. Oh, I know, me too, absolutely. What the idea is, even when you don't feel good, to celebrate. I had a life coach for several years. His name is Michel Renault from Canada. And I worked with him for years, and every once in a while I'd have a cold or the flu or something, and I'd call him up, and he'd say, oh, good, you're sick. I'd say, Michel, this is not good. I don't like to be sick. He says, oh, really? Oh, okay. And so, of course, I said, well, you like to be sick? And he says, oh, yeah, I love to be sick. I'm thinking, whoa. I said, how can you celebrate sick? And he says, oh, no, no, it's great to be sick because I know my body's generating some more antibodies. And besides, I get to a great excuse to just lay around and do what I'd never do if I was well. And it gives me reasons to not, like, serve my kids and my wife because I got a great reason I'm sick. And he says, oh, I love to be sick. All right. So, by the way, I don't. I practice. I've just gotten over being sick. I had the flu I was out of work for about 3 days. I kept practicing it even. I even talked to my coaches about it. But anyway, it's a possibility, even when you're sick, that every circumstance, use it to celebrate. For example, the weather. Now, if you look outside, this weather, for some of you, you wouldn't celebrate because it's the snow's coming down and it's cold and the wind's blowing and it's icy and it's slippery. But what if we could celebrate everything, or at least practice, ritualistically, daily? You wake up and you look out and you say, "Wow, the weather! Man, I'm glad there's weather, especially good weather like this." Because in fact, from my point of view, we haven't had any bad weather for quite a while. Now, I know some of you have been talking about the weather's been kind of bad, but really, when was the last time we had bad weather? I mean, really bad weather. From what I know, it was about 12,000 years ago. That was bad weather. No kidding, these huge sheets of ice just came scraping along the ground, mowed down every tree. You know, there was no crops for years. People, now that's bad weather. That is. But since then, it's been pretty good. Remember my father, when I was growing up, we grew up in Deadwood, South Dakota. It's up in the mountains. Some of you know where it is, but my dad said, in Deadwood, we've got 9 months of winter and then 3 months of poor sledding. But he'd joke about it all the time, and he'd say, you know the one thing, though? He says, this weather, this is better than no weather at all. So we just celebrate. Look to see, when can you celebrate? Celebrate everything, even the weather. Celebrate the sickness. Now, not only did Michelle celebrate things like a cold, but at the end of my mother's life, this is about the most touching thing that's ever occurred in my life, is how much she celebrated at the end of her life. And it was a huge inspiration to me. One of the biggest gifts I've ever received. And I've received a lot of gifts from my parents. But near the end of my mother's life, she had lung cancer. She also died of lung cancer. And she got very frail. And like my father, who died for about 9 months and we knew it, my mother died for about 3.5 years and we knew it. Doctor said, "You're going to die and there's nothing we can do." And so we knew she was dying. And really, she was pretty good until the last couple of months. And in those last couple of months, she went from a woman of about 130 pounds down to a woman of about 60 pounds. And she went from a woman who was in her early 70s and looked pretty good and young to a woman who looked very, very old. And I remember carrying her from her bed into the living room, and just this nothing of a woman celebrating. That was what was fun. And giggling. You know, I'd carry her in there, and she'd just be giggling. I'd say, "Mom, what is so funny?" She says, "I used to do this to you." And one time in particular, I remember this was very near the end of her life. It was the last week of her life, and she couldn't eat. She hadn't eaten for quite a while, and she was laying in bed, and her mouth would get dry, and we'd put ice chips or Jell-O in her mouth. And I remember two instances here. One was I was feeding her ice chips, and I'd put these ice chips in her mouth, and they'd often fall out because I just wasn't very good at it. And finally, she looked at me, and she says, "Dave, you're very talented in some ways, but you do not know how to do this." She laughed. She was just celebrating. Really. A few days later, maybe it was just another day, because this is really close to when she died, my youngest daughter Elizabeth was there. And Elizabeth was feeding her peach Jell-O, little bites of peach Jell-O. And I was watching this, and it was amazing. My mom would take this Jell-O like it was souffle, like it was the finest steak, like it was the best gourmet meal. And she'd just take that Jell-O, and she'd close her eyes, and she'd smile, and she'd go, "Mmm." And she'd open her mouth again. And Elizabeth would put some more Jell-O in there. And my mom would close her eyes, and she'd just savor the Jell-O. And I'm thinking, wow, here she is, just this far from dead. And she's savoring peach Jell-O. I don't know when you ate peach Jell-O last, but it's not very good. Unless it is. And it was. And that's what I'm recommending you bring to life, that we can all bring to life. Because see, to me, if my mom can celebrate peach Jell-O when she's just about dead, we can celebrate everything. And we deserve to. As long as I'm getting sentimental, I'm and about my parents, I just want to finish my parents' story by reading this plaque back here because it's so true for me. And I got to make this plaque and give it to my parents or my mother before she died. And it was right in this room, and I put it on a big easel over there, and I covered it with a velvet tarp, and she came, and her friends came, and some of our relatives came, and I unveiled this and read it. And my mom just wept, which I thought was really cool, because she didn't weep that much, and I like to make people weep. And this is what it says. This facility and land is dedicated in memory and acknowledgement of my mother and father. Ken and Mary Ellen Ellis presented a model of egalitarian relationship long before it was fashionable. They taught me that women can be strong and capable, and that men can be gentle and loving. They demonstrated the value of community service and the importance of dreaming, envisioning a future consistent with our ideals. I owe most of what I know and who I am to my parents. And that's the picture of them in various stages of their life. And I just want to celebrate them. And have you join me in celebrating all of it. And particularly whatever it is that's a little hard for you to celebrate, that you practice celebrating that. So if the weather's a little hard for you to practice celebrating, celebrate it. So we're looking for every domain of life where it might be hard to celebrate. The news. Oh, I really like to try to do this. Because the newspaper is often filled with that which is difficult to celebrate. So when I see something like some horrendous crime that was committed, and it's all written about in gory detail, what I like to do is say, wow, am I glad that this is news? Because if it wasn't news, it would mean it was common. But you know those horrendous murders and multiple homicides and all that? You don't realize how little that happens. That we have to search the world to find one occurrence of that every few weeks. I'm thinking that's worth celebrating. Now, you may not, but hey, give it a try. Celebrate whatever it is that looks hard to celebrate. That's the idea.
Dave, people I know are often surprised that as an organization, you even celebrate mistakes. How did this practice come about?
I like to have fun at work, and mistakes generally aren't fun, and we make a lot of them. Every place I've ever worked has made a lot of mistakes, and it makes work no fun. So I was thinking, well, how can I have more fun at work? And it's to have mistakes not be so heavy and so troublesome. And I thought, well, could we even celebrate mistakes? So we sat around one day and we made a long list of all of the different benefits of actually celebrating mistakes. And I want to explain a few of those to encourage other people to actually celebrate mistakes. So here's five reasons that I see that make it sensible for us to actually celebrate our mistakes. First of all, when we celebrate our mistakes, it's way more likely that we'll continue to notice them. In many organizations, when we make a mistake, we just sweep it under the rug. Now, of course, the problem with sweeping a mistake under the rug is then we can't solve it, we can't fix it, we can't deal with it. But if we start celebrating them, it's a lot more likely that we won't have to sweep it under the rug. Second good reason is that they're valuable teachers. When we take and focus on our mistakes and don't have them be so heavy and don't ignore them, we learn a whole lot. I remember one of my coworkers that he came to me and he confessed that he'd made a mistake that cost me about $63,000. And I think he thought he was going to get fired. But I remembered an old line that I read from a book, and I told him, no, no, Bill, I'm not going to fire you. I just spent $63,000 training you. Third reason that I see that it makes sense to celebrate mistakes is that it demonstrates that we're taking risks. I don't want people that are working for me that are playing it safe. I want people to take initiative. And when you take initiative, you make mistakes. Fourth reason why I think it's great to celebrate mistakes is that it reminds us that we are okay. We're not perfect. We're human beings, and we're fallible. And when people just go around kicking themselves and hitting themselves and denigrating themselves when they make mistakes, I think it just sends the wrong message consistently.
And the last reason, and maybe even the most important for me, is that mistakes show that we are committed. We only call something a mistake if it's counter to our high standards. And when we have high standards and we don't reach them, we say it's a mistake. But if we don't have that high standard, it doesn't matter. For example, in Germany, they have a really high standard that the trains run on time. So there, if a train's a minute late, that's a mistake. In Russia, on the other hand, there's no standard for trains being on time, and if a train might be 15, 20 minutes late, that's not even considered a mistake. So when we celebrate mistakes, it demonstrates that we are very committed to a high standard of excellence.
Now we're going to return to the workshop where you're answering questions as a way to coach people.
Now, I'm going to go back to your questions and answers because it's the most fun part of a workshop for me. And besides, you asked, so I figured you want the answer. I told you to only turn in your questions if you wanted the answer.
If you have questions for Dave, please mail them to the address on this package or email them to fallingawake.com. If you write those questions now, you'll listen to what he's about to say through the filter of your questions. Such listening will increase the value you get from the rest of the program. Please pause the program now and write at least 3 questions.
So I'm figuring you wanted the answer. And I was looking at how can I have the most fun in this last section of our workshop before we really turn on the celebration. And for me, the most fun I can have is to give you what you say you wanted, which is the tip of the iceberg answer to some of these questions. So I'm going to go through several of them. You made the statement that the question is probably more important than the answer. Would you elaborate and explain that? Yeah. I think that a question stimulates your creativity. I think a question is a way to open up an inquiry that dips you down into your subconscious. I believe that a properly formulated question about what you're exploring will assist you to invent and create what otherwise you wouldn't invent and create. That's, again, why I built this. To be a place where people think what they've never thought. They say what they've never said. They write what they've never written, and even they feel what they've never felt. And I believe that questions assist with that. Now, my favorite question is, what do you want? But any question begins to assist with that. Now, there's other values of questions, but that's just one answer. I'm not sure I can be maximally happy with my boyfriend because of our life interests. When do I follow my intuition or keep exploring compatibility? Wow, this is really good. When do I follow my intuition or keep exploring compatibility? Well, of course, who knows? I have an answer, which is follow your intuition always, particularly when your intuition equals your desire. See, I just trust that. I know not everybody does, but I am kind of on a campaign to get people to trust their desire. So I'm saying, hey, do you want to be with your boyfriend? You look and you say, no. Good. Leave him. Really? Really? Now, a lot of times you say, do you want to be with your boyfriend? And you go, I don't know. That's what most people say, because they don't trust their intuition. So I'd say, well, choose. Just force choice for today. You want to be with your boyfriend? No. Okay? Leave him. I'm not sure. Okay, well then chart it. Ask yourself every day for a couple of weeks and put down either yes or no. And then take a look. Oh, so then if I want to leave him 9 days out of 12, I should leave him? No. 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 Ask yourself on the 13th day, and if the answer is leave him, leave him. It's just an answer. How do I get started fundraising? How do I generate more money when there is none? How do I raise money from other people? Oh, I love this question. I've done a lot of fundraising training and assisting other people to raise money. Did that in our local community. I joined the United Way, and they were having troubles meeting their goals. So I was really vocal. First of all, I got them to raise their goals, which nobody wanted to do. And they didn't raise them as far as I wanted them to, but I got them to raise them. And then I did training of all the fundraisers. And for the first year in 5 years, we raised the goal. Now, by the way, that wasn't just me. There was a lot of factors involved. But I love to assist people to raise money. I've got lots of answers for this question. Tip of the iceberg answer is ask a lot of people a lot. Ask a lot of people a lot. Because then it doesn't matter how many no's you get. If you ask enough, you're likely to find somebody who wants to give to your project. And what people do, I think, in fundraising that stops them is they don't ask enough people. And they don't ask them for enough. I remember I was the recipient of one of the best fundraisers that I've ever heard. I told you about her. She's raised millions and millions of dollars. And she asked me if I'd give $5,000 to this organization to help end hunger on the planet. And I just about croaked. I said, $5,000? I don't have $5,000. I don't even have $5,000 in my savings account. How can I give $5,000? And she says, oh, I'm sorry. I misinterpreted. I'd like you to give $10,000. It was so audacious, I did it. I said, okay, I will. It took me a year to raise it, and I gave it. If you want it all, when do you start? And where do you start? Yeah, that's a great question. The answer I like is where you are. But I know it sounds like a bumper sticker, so I'd like to come up with a better answer. But if you want it all, where do you start? The answer is where you are. It's a great answer, but it sounds like a bumper sticker, so make up a better one. How to take responsibility for my gift of compassion so that I can nurture it and stand in the truth and give it to others responsibly. Yeah. Well, if I understand this question, my answer is to start with yourself. Bill and I had a conversation about this at the last break, and his encouragement was for me to speak in some way so that you would all give more money. You know that $10 million that you gave? That he thought it would be more realistic if I would have spoken in a way so that you gave more of it to yourself. Now, I know I kind of set it up for you not to give it to yourself and not to give it to your family and your friends, but I agree with Bill, and I think that's a great way to start compassionate giving is with your family and with your friends. Now, that money I told you I've given away, I don't put in my giveaway category money I've given to my children or my friends or my parents. That's in another category, which is really big, called kids and parents and gifts. And I recommend that you do that first, actually. Well, at least I do. So I don't know if I recommend it. It's just one answer. Start at home. How do I get a full vision before I leave this workshop of my personal power? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, here we go. This is for all of you. I want to give you a full vision of your personal power before you leave the workshop. Okay? You ready? Oh, it didn't work. So what I'm about to do is give you a complete vision so you leave absolutely, completely knowing how powerful you are. So you never again question your power. Now, of course you're not omnipotent, you're not omnipresent. There are limitations to your power, but they're way beyond what you generally experience, and you know that. So what I want to do is give you a sense of your personal power so that when you walk out, you'll just know, oh yeah, we've got that one handled. I know how powerful I am. So you just kind of walk out like, you know, like that, like a guy strolling, a woman strolling down the street like she's like he's just something, like I'm powerful. And not arrogant, but that you know that you're way more powerful than you thought you were. And so I'm here to give that to you so that when you leave, you'll never ever forget how powerful you are. You won't question it. You won't wonder when you're going to be powerful. You won't wonder when you're going to have an experience of your power. You'll just know. You'll just walk and you'll just feel that. And once in a while you'll have a thought like, am I powerful? But then, of course, you'll just remember that you got your personal power and you'll never forget it again. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yep. Poof! Personal power moves a little slowly. Look, it's just one answer. It's just one answer, but why not? I mean, you know, why not? Why not just walk out now and know that you're powerful? Way more powerful than you ever were, and just know it and quit questioning it.
Dave, even though you're joking about it, I think you believe that people in the workshop can actually leave with a renewed sense of their personal power. Do you think it's also possible for the people listening to this program to experience, without question, that they are powerful?
Absolutely. I know that as you are listening to this, that you can remember how powerful you are. When most of us were children, we knew. We knew we were capable. We knew we were competent. And then, through a lot of different actions, most of us forgot it. I think you can get back that sense of how powerful you are and how competent you are. And it's not because you're listening to this program. It's because you're willing to remember, to fall awake, to wake up to the fact that you are powerful, you are skillful, and you are competent. And it's not because I go poof. It's because you go poof. And through that, you wake up.
After you lost $4 million, what were your first three steps to moving to financial recovery? Well, the first one was I cried. Yeah. Now, I know that this is a question probably like, if you lost a bunch of money, how would you recover? And that's a good question. So I'll tell you how I did it, and that'll just be the tip of the iceberg answer. And really, I cried. Like, literally cried. Wept. Because it was a lot of money. Darn. So that was the first step. Second step is I developed a plan for how I might be able to repay it. Because although I lost $2 million, I owed the bank about $2 million. And they weren't really very happy. Because, you know, they didn't know how I was going to repay it, and I didn't either. So I developed a plan from my best point of view that I could repay it. And then I went to work. And yeah, this seems too simple, but that's what I did. Next question. Would you like to be a guest on Oprah? Yes. Actually, I'd love to be a guest on Oprah because I have a goal to dramatically and permanently improve the life of millions of people through the dissemination as well as invention of success strategies. And I think I've got some success strategies here that are very unique. And a way to assist people to have a more wonderful life that's unique. And I'd love to bring that to the masses. What is one of the most thought-provoking fiction books you've read? The Truth Machine. It's a really good book. It's about the future where they invent this machine that tells with 100% accuracy if you're telling the truth or not. And so what happens is people just start telling the truth. And it works great because when you go into court and there's a criminal and the defendant comes up, they just hook him to the machine and say, did you do it? He says yes or no, and it's it. Court's over. They hook up with the politician and they at a press conference, and politicians just have to tell all the truth. You get married and you go in and you hook yourself up to the truth machine and you ask each other some questions and, oh, it's a fun book. I can picture myself in the future. I know exactly how it looks, but I have a voice that says no. Why? Yeah, it's a good question. Because some of you have this. I don't think whoever wrote this is unique. That you can picture your future, you can see it clearly, but there's something in your head that says no. What is it? Why is that?
Well, I think there's two possibilities. One is, it's your true desire saying, no, that's not quite it.
And if that possibility is true, just go back to the drawing board.
When you plan your future, and you're even committed to it, and then you wake up in the morning and you're not excited, well, you could question yourself and wonder if there's something wrong with you. I recommend instead that you go and change your plan for the future.
Not worry that there's something wrong with you, because I don't think there's something wrong with you. I think if your future is not compelling, it's the wrong future. Now you say, yeah, but what if I've promised? What if I've given my word?
Well, you take a look, and it might be the wrong promise. So you go and rescind it.
I don't think there's anything wrong with rescinding your word. Look, your word, a promise, for me, is just a tool. It's a tool to bring yourself forward. And it's great to keep your word, except when you don't. I think it's really effective when you keep your word, except when you don't. Then it's effective not to keep your word and to change your word. Now, some of you think I'm on a pretty slippery slope of moral integrity here. You're saying, well, wait a minute, you're suggesting that we could just give our word and then just go and take it back?
Yeah, absolutely. You do it all the time.
Anyway, so you might as well just do it proudly. You all do it sheepishly, like there's something wrong with you. I'm recommending you take your word back proudly. Say, I know I said I would, but I thought about it, I'm not gonna. I mean, you don't have to do it quite antagonistically, but proudly. So that you have the future and the word that works for you, for now. Say, yeah, but if I keep changing my word, people can't depend upon me. Well, that's true, but they can't depend upon you now. I mean, they act like they can, but they can't. You break your word a lot. So they can't depend upon you, at least this way. If you tell them you've changed your word, they can depend upon you far more. Because they know if you give your word and haven't taken it back, you'll keep it. And that's way more dependable than most people are. So you'll be a darn dependable person. And besides, ultimately, well, I mean, you're going to die anyway, so people can't really depend upon you. They can depend upon you a bit, but not the whole enchilada. So the point is, anyway, if that little voice is saying no, listen, it might be the wrong thing.
Dave, it sounds as if you're being flippant about keeping your word. I know you, and I know how important it is to you to do what you say you'll do, and to be reliable, and to operate with integrity. Are you exaggerating in your answer?
No, I wasn't exaggerating, but I did not add the other side of the story. And, of course, the other side of the story is that when we give our word, it really works well to keep it. And it's just that sometimes people know that they're not going to keep it. They know that when they've made their promise, either to stay married or to do a particular business deal or even to go to dinner at 5 o'clock, sometimes it just isn't going to work. And then what I recommend is that you be honest about it and take it back. Rescind the promise. Rescinding a promise is not a tool that I recommend is used very often, because I think if you do that very often, people then will realize that your promise isn't very good, and they won't rely on you. They'll realize that you might say you'll do it, but very seldom will you do it. I think that once in a while, if you rescind your promise, if you take it back, people will actually rely on you more, because they know that you'll either do it or you'll let them know that you're not going to do it.
Thanks for these questions, by the way. I've just got a few more, and I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am. Most of your faces look like you are. At least you're enjoying my enjoyment, which is enough for me. How do I listen fully and go to what I say without interrupting? Ooh, this is good, and we have not talked about this yet. Because listening fully works very well. And eventually, you want to be able to speak, and you have the right to. And I think interruption is a great technique. So after you've listened and listened and listened and listened and listened, and you're done listening, and you feel like you've listened well, then listen a little more, and then you know you're done listening, And stop listening. Say, okay, thanks. Let me think on this. I'm filled up. I've had enough for now. I appreciate it. Let me go think on this, and I want to come back and tell you what I think. Then you go away, you contemplate, make some notes, come back, and say, you know, we talked the other day, and I listened to you for about an hour and a half. I want to talk now. And so you start to talk, and I'll bet the person will interrupt you because they haven't been trained. So what you say is, wait a minute. The other day I listened to you for an hour and a half, and I want to talk now. It's my turn. At least give me 15 minutes. And I don't want you to respond. I just want you to listen. And then you'll start to talk, and you'll talk for 2 or 3 minutes, and the person will interrupt you again. And they'll piggyback, or they'll contradict, or they'll steal the topic. You say, wait a minute. Now look, I gave you an hour and a half of undivided listening. Remember that? I want some of that. I really want that. And the person will close their mouth for a little bit. So then you give them about 5 more minutes, and then they'll glaze over, and then you stop. And then they'll go away, and you go away. Now, you didn't get an hour and a half, but sometimes to get 5 minutes, you give an hour and a half. And then you interrupt, and then you take your time. Well, there's an idea. How can I find out more about the Brand Foundation? The Brand Foundation is something I started in 1987 as a vehicle through which to give away money. And I named it after my mother's grandfather who raised her. His name was Brand, B-R-A-N-D-E. And the primary project of the Brand Foundation now is to provide life coaching, the kind of coaching that you get, but over the long haul, like a year or two or seven or more, to leaders of nonprofits. This is a project that Bill primarily coordinates. He interviews leaders of nonprofits, big nonprofits, and then provides them with a life coach. He supervises, and we train these life coaches. And you can find out more by going to brandfoundation.org on the web. How did you achieve the incredible energy referred to as vibrant health?
Lots of exercise, lots of water, great food. I mean, it's so simple. See, people make it really complicated. I don't think it's that complicated, honestly. I think people make it complicated because, who knows, bad habit. Lots of exercise, lots of water, great food. Luck.
Dave, did I hear you say that luck is an important component to vibrant health?
Well, yeah, I did. And I know it was kind of a tack on. And I also realized that these answers are just the tip of the iceberg to a full answer to any of the questions. And I want to remind all of you as you listen to me answering these questions that I'm doing it to provide a spark of creativity so that you'll come up with your great answers. As I've mentioned a few other times during the workshop, I believe that questions are far more important than the answers. And I want to read these questions and then have you, as you're listening to them, invent your own answers, answers that are much more comprehensive and much more skillful than my answers. Now, I want to go back into my answer because I do believe that luck has an important component in vibrant health. People are born sometimes with genetic defects or diseases that they inherited from their parents. And that's just luck or not luck. We're born in cultures where we get plenty of food and nutrition that helps us be healthy. And that's a matter of luck or not luck. So I do think there's a component there. And then I also stand by my simplistic answer that it's in large part the result of exercise and great food and plenty of water. But in addition to all that, we all know that our mental state has a great deal to do with our physical state. So that our ability to manage distress, that our ability to handle depression, that our ability to solve problems, that our ability to reach our goals is very important not only to our mental health, but our physical health. So yeah, there's a little bit of luck and a whole lot of hard work and commitment and intention.
How do you keep it all balanced? Oh, that's why I use all these 3x5 cards. so that I balance work, fun, travel, family, spiritual development, fun, travel, kids? Where do you envision the retreat center and Falling Awake going? Getting much bigger and dramatically and permanently improving the life of millions of people in the next 35 years. Millions, dramatically now. As dramatically as your life has been touched, because it looks like we kind of did it here. And, you know, 30 at a time, millions is going to take a while. But we'll figure it out. I don't know, it's just an idea. It's just for fun, really. Are you going to do workshops for couples? Yeah. I'm really excited about this, to assist couples to have really great marriages, and particularly spicy, hot, erotic, enjoyable, passionate, intimate marriages. And we're going to do that as soon as Tricia decides to. I have this philosophy about how to have a wonderful marriage, and that is to do whatever your wife wants. And so if don't come to the workshop if you want to hear something different than that. Now, you know, there's a few details you'll throw in, but that's the basic technique. So my dad did. It worked. Yeah. If there was one attitude or technique that you could call the most important, what is it? Laugh. Have fun. Enjoy yourself. Another good question. What do you believe to be the most effective way to bring about positive change for all things on the greatest scale? What's the most effective way to bring about positive change for all things at the greatest scale? I know there's some more questions, but I don't think I can ask any more because I think we've got to stop right there. It's a great question. What do you believe to be the most effective way to bring about positive change for all things at the greatest scale? All right, now we're going to do an exercise to perpetuate celebration. So for this exercise, I'd like you to pick now somebody you feel like you know. Now, I know you kind of know everybody a little bit, but pick somebody for this exercise that you feel like you know a little better than somebody else. Go!
If you're listening to this program with another person, please do this exercise as Dave is explaining it. If you're listening to this alone, please write down the directions and plan a time to do this with a friend in the next day or two.
Now, I know some of you don't know each other very well, but this is going to be a really cool exercise whether you know each other very well or not. Some of you are doing it with your spouse. That's great, great technique. But it doesn't really matter if you know each other well, but some of you are. And for this exercise, Richard, let's you and me practice for a minute here. You know, you can like touch, maybe with a handshake, if that's comfortable. And just stand there and look into the person because you're going to listen to them and in touch. So that's one way. Or you could kind of touch like more of a Native American handshake, more like that, like a two-handed or an arm handshake, like that. Or you could touch like with holding hands, like that. And you know, because I actually like to stand here with Richard like this, with both my hands and looking in his eyes. So you can touch like that. All right, now for this particular exercise, Richard and I are going to demonstrate it in a minute, but you need to have a potato and a salad. So raise your hand, potato. Raise your hand, salad. Okay, potato, you're going to go first. And what you're going to do is you're going to tell salad what you like about him or her. So potato, like I'm a potato, and I'm going to tell Richard what I like about him. I'm going to say, what I like about you is, and I'm going to tell him something. And then I'm going to say, and what I like about you is, and then I'm going to tell him something else. Now, some of you say, wait a minute, I just picked somebody I don't know very well. No problem. Make up stuff. We've done this exercise a lot with strangers, complete strangers, and what they make up is uncannily accurate. So don't worry about it. It's not your exercise anyway, potato. It's Salad's exercise. It's Salad's exercise to absorb it. See, it's really Richard's exercise. I'm just giving him a little fodder for his exercise. Then I'm going to say, and what I like about you is, and I'm going to say something else. And then, of course, I'm going to go blank, which in case, I'm going to say, what I like about you is?
Everything.
Sure. Now, of course, it's not true. Even though Richard's one of the nicest, most kind, wonderful human beings on earth, I don't like everything about him. But I'm going to say it anyway, because it's not my exercise. It's his exercise to absorb. That's what I want you to do, is to start absorbing the celebration. Because see, if we go in tonight and everybody's celebrating, but nobody's absorbing, it'll fall flat. So this is absorbing the celebration. So Salad, it's your exercise. Now here's what I want you to do, is avoid your common tendency, which is when you get a compliment to say things like this. Oh, really? Oh, I thought it was too short. Or, oh, you like it? Well, it's old and I got it on sale. No, don't do that. Because a lot of times when we get that compliment, we do that. We say, oh, really? You thought it was good? Well, you don't know all the mistakes I made. No, don't do that. Or we get a compliment and we say, oh, well, thanks, but it was really my team. No, don't do that. Because essentially what you're doing is you're telling the person who's giving you the compliment that they're full of it. That they don't know what they're talking about. Don't do that. Your job, Salad, is to absorb the compliment and to accept it and to allow it and to agree with it, to know that it's true. And then, after you absorb the compliments for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, 2 minutes of it. Now, don't worry, Potato, because I know you're going to go blank. You just say everything. You can say everything a lot of times if you want and just make stuff up. It doesn't matter. But now when we get done, Salad, here's your line. You say, Salad, after it all, you respond with, thank you, I know. Okay, Salad, let's practice. 1, 2, 3, thank you, I know. All right, you got your line? Now I'm going to demonstrate this so you understand how this is going. Okay, Richard, here we go. Oh, what I like about you is what a wonderful husband you are. Oh, what I like about you is how handsome you are. What I like about you is your new glasses. And what I like about you is what a gift you are to me in my life. What I like about you, what I love about you, is what a wonderful man you are to my wife. And what I like about you is how talented you are and how much you give to people. And what I like about you is your undying commitment to your clients. What I like about you is how much you give to me all the time when we're in an interaction. What I like about you is you're the best listener that I know. What I like about you is how much you love your wife. What I like about you is what a wonderful husband you've been. What I like about you is what a great father you've been to your daughter. What I like about you is everything.
Thank you. I know.
All right, there we go. You get 2.5 minutes. I only did 30 seconds. Ready? Go.
If you're doing this with a partner, please pause the program now for 2 minutes and do the exercise. If you're doing this program alone, keep listening.
I'd like to hear from a couple of you Salads, because it was really your exercise. Chris, go ahead. So Chris was the one that listened and received it and said, thank you, I know. What was that like?
It was great, actually. Barry and I don't know each other very well. But she said a couple of things that I think I needed to hear at this point. And she did hit on a couple of things that are true about me that I don't give myself credit for, and I totally needed that.
Wow, great. And did you allow it in? Did you
yes,
really?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good. All right. Salad, what was it like, Peter?
Well, I don't know my partner at all, so it was good because all he can base it on is what I've said, so it was kind of the kernel of what I think I am. So it was like, yep, that's basically what I think.
Good. Yeah. See, because even though you say you don't know, you've actually spent 3 days together, and Peter shared a lot, and he's spoken a lot. So I think that Jim does know you, and I bet that 90% of what he said was very accurate. So thanks for getting it. Yeah, Connie. And then to Deb.
I found it really moving that this is, I work a lot every day with Dan, and I really like him as a friend, and we come from such opposite ends of the brain scale. I'm creative and he's computer programmer, and so it's just incredible. I love working with him, and it was just cool hearing all those nice things that he said.
Right, and they were true.
Yes, they were true.
All right, very good, Connie, thanks. Because remember, it's your exercise to absorb this, to be able to take it in, to be able to really accept it as the truth, because it is your partner's truth. Deb.
I love this man dearly, and I feel like I know him really well. And yet, to hear his words, and some words that I hadn't really heard before, even though I think he's tried to tell me, was the greatest gift I can imagine receiving. So thank you.
Yeah, and that's it, folks. That's what I'm asking you to develop, is to hear what people have been trying to tell you. Because people have been trying to tell you, and you've been being, like, polite, or I think impolite, and not getting it. So thanks for getting it. Okay, we're going to shift gears, but we've got a new response. So, Richard, we better practice again. We better demonstrate. I think they need another demonstration. So now this time, Richard's going to send to me, and he's going to say, of course, what I like about you is, what I like about you is, what I like about you is. And my response is, thank you, you're very perceptive. So Richard's going to go on in this case for only about 30 seconds, not 2 minutes, and then I'm going to say, practice with me, thank you, you're very perceptive. Now, of course, in the future, I'm not suggesting that you go out and when somebody gives you a compliment, you say, thank you, I know. But I do ask that you remember this so that when they say that, you say, thank you, and you think, I know. Or you think, wow, you're perceptive. And you smile and you absorb it and you know that they're accurate. And that's the change that allows for the celebration. So I think we better model this, Richard.
Can I put one hand right here?
You
Would
bet.
That be okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
What I like about you is that I could be here and be silent and say nothing, and you would get everything I have to send. What I like about you is that the dear, dear friend that you are to me. What I like about you is all that you teach, all that you so freely give. What I like about you is that the model father you've been for me to be a model father. What I like about you is all that I've learned that I so readily and generously give to others. What I like about you is the master, teacher, being that you are in my life.
Thanks. Thank you. You're very perceptive. See, some people at the end of the day have a cocktail. But they could have had a V8. So thank you. Thank you. Now, when you say thank you, you're very perceptive. I recommend you do it without the laughter, the smile, the acknowledgement, but really try and feel that. All right. Go for it. 2.5 minutes. Begin. What I like about you is...
If you're doing this program alone, please commit to more fully receiving the next compliment you get. If you're doing this with a partner, please pause the program now for 2.5 minutes and do the exercise. This is the conclusion of the audio presentation of the Success Strategy Celebrate. This was an excerpt from the 14-part audio version of the Falling Awake Workshop. Dave, if this was valuable for the listener, what else is available?
There are 11 other programs that follow the other success strategies in Falling Awake. There's also one complete version of the entire workshop on audio. We also have the workshop on videotape, both in a 12-hour version and in a condensed 2-hour version. All of these are linked to the book Falling Awake, which can be purchased either in a paperback version or it can be read entirely on our website. Now, the website at fallingawake.com contains not only the book, but a comprehensive life planning program, which is a way to do exactly what we've talked about during this program, except on the computer. Also on the website is a wake-up call service, which is a way for you to be reminded either by a telephone or fax or pager what you want to remember, what's important in your life. Also on the website is a networking bulletin board and an online journaling system, and a way to stay in contact with us, because that's what we want you all to do, is to stay in touch with us so we know what's working, what's not, and how we can improve our services. Because all of this is designed with one purpose in mind, which is to assist you to dramatically and permanently improve the quality of your life.
This program was produced by Breakthrough Enterprises Incorporated, located at 13179 Baker Park Road in Rapid City, South Dakota, zip code 57702. We wish to thank the participants of the Falling Awake Workshop who brought realism to this program by their willingness to share their life stories. We also thank the people at Lynn Productions who recorded and edited this audio program. Thanks also to the life coaches and the staff of Breakthrough Enterprises Incorporated and the Brand Foundation who contributed their time and expertise to this program. More information about Falling Awake and Dave Ellis' other books can be found at www.fallingawake.com.